gentlemen, Family Feud is proud to present its traditional battle between the gruesome gladiators of World Championship Wrestling and the amazing Amazons of Glow.
From Television City in Hollywood,
this podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Discretionary viewer participation is advised for the following professional wrestling exhibition.
Due to the coronavirus pandemic, Greetings from Allentown is not taped in front of a live studio audience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 168 of Greetings from Allentown. I am your host, Peter Winston. And today, as you can tell by this wonderful, beautiful music playing underneath me right now that I just want to sing along with. The big finish. The big finish for the Family Feud theme. Oh, that gets my blood. Oh my God, it is so great to be doing a show on Family Feud. And this is not some sort of April Fool's joke or whatever. No, I am covering episodes of Family Feud in which wrestlers have appeared. And I'm going to take one from the WWF that aired in early 1993, just before WrestleMania 9. Well, actually, it wouldn't have been just before. It would have been, I think, about 2 months, based on the face-heel dynamic of the two teams, as it were. Because you got to keep that separate. I mean, Family Feud, that's as kayfabe as it gets. But I'll also be covering the WCW appearance on Family Feud. There's more than one. I don't know if they were there for the entire week, but there are clips of two different episodes that aired, where it is WCW versus GLOW, which you could hear the introduction for in the cold open at the top of the show. I mean, Family Feud means a lot to me. I mean, I haven't watched it very much in the last probably two decades, but as a kid, it was something that I enjoyed greatly. And you had to know that this episode was coming, because I've probably referred to, you know, the stuff that happened in these episodes more than once. But anyway, before I get into all that, let me get in my plugs. You can email the show, greetingsfromallentown@gmail.com. Facebook.com/greetingsfromallentown. Give me a follow on Twitter, @GFAllentownPod. That is @GFAllentownPod. And of course, you may be listening to the show on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, where you can find this show for the last 3 years, along with the other great programs as well. I did allude to this a few weeks ago, and I do want to make the announcement, at least at the top of the show, that I'm going to be leaving the Pro Wrestling Only feed after episode 170. It's been 3 years on the feed. It's time for me to vacate and let somebody else have Thursday mornings on the feed. There's a lot of great shows on there. I urge you to, if you're already subscribed to maintain your subscription, but to also subscribe to my feed so that you don't end up missing anything. I'm not getting a Patreon or anything. I mean, didn't you hear my freaking rant 3 or 4 weeks ago where I just really don't care about that sort of stuff? I mean, maybe someday if, you know, I lost my job or, you know, if the right opportunity came along, but I just want to throw that out there because, you know, it is time for somebody else to have a shot on that feed, because it's been 3 years every Thursday morning. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Now, I mentioned, I think, on GFA Live over the weekend that I have a new laptop coming that I ordered last week. That I had a little bit to drink, and I decided, you know what, I've had enough of this crap, because I've actually kvetched about my laptop for probably the better part of 2 years while doing this podcast, because there have been times where it's like halted and like held me up, and then I had to go back and dub stuff in. I mean, that's a lot less frequent as I sort of notice stuff. Well, like there was an episode about a year ago where about 3 minutes just completely disappeared, which I'm blaming completely on this laptop. But it arrived, the new one, today as I taped this on Monday. And I'm going to use it starting next week, which, well, hopefully. Hopefully it's not cursed and it didn't arrive with like a dead battery or something like that. But I'm very excited for it because, well, not only is it a much faster computer with, I think the processor is 32 gigs of RAM, up to 32 gigs of RAM, and this one has 4, so it should move a little bit better. But mainly because we live now in an existence of Zoom calls because we can't quite go out in public yet. Although New Hampshire has now opened hair salons, which I suppose, I mean, I usually get my hair cut in Pelham, New Hampshire, but I don't think I'm going to go up there because supposedly the rumor is that Massachusetts people have been get hassled for whatever reason, and I don't really care. And I might give Massachusetts my business going forward. You know, screw the whole sales tax thing. I mean, when I bought the laptop, I paid whatever the hell the sales tax was on the purchase price and said, you know what, I'm going to support my home state because, as I've mentioned, we are completely screwed going forward. So my laptop now is actually very good for Zoom calls because the one ask that I had, and you'd think I would want something that was good for podcasting, and I did have that in mind, but I needed the camera in the middle of the screen so that I knew what I was looking at when I'm on these Zoom calls with my friends. And I like, you know, having a proper background with my Velvet Elvis, the frame thing of Camden Yards, Bruins Stanley Cup, all that stuff like over my shoulder. So I need that in the center of the screen because my work laptop has it down in the bottom left part of the screen. It's a Dell, and it annoys me because everything is like at 3/4, and I never know quite where to look, and I can't, you know, do two things at once. And these Zoom calls have been very important to me these last 2 months, I guess it's been now, talking to 4 of my friends who, by the way, we have decided because we are so starved for sports and also for weird forms of gambling, we have a NFL wins pool, which I've mentioned on the podcast before, where we each have 6 teams, so 30 out of 32 teams are represented. I happened to win that last year. But with baseball not around, our usual wins and losses pool has now changed over into a KBO league wins pool, which is we each pick 2 teams from the Korean Baseball League, KBO, and we're just going to ride that out going forward. So we're going to care about Korean baseball for the next 5-6 months, however long their season is. So all I can say to that is go Kiwoom Heroes. The other thing that it's happening that kind of occurred to me on the call last Friday with them is that, you know, 3 of these guys have kids. And they have the boy-girl setup, so that's good. They don't have to go for any more. They're all set there. But in terms of explaining this thing to kids of, you know, varying ages, I guess. But, you know, the oldest in the group would probably be about 10 or 11 years old. And I'm thinking to myself, if this happened when I was 10 or 11, I would probably be very upset that sports wasn't on. Especially if it was 1989, 1990, and none of these channels would show old games or anything like that. There's no YouTube. It would be difficult, but I would probably just be playing Baseball Stars on the Nintendo for like the foreseeable future. I mean, that's what I did when I was that age. And, you know, they worry about how to discuss things with their kids. And one of them had mentioned, somebody brought up, you know, the access to pornography these days is so readily available to kids. It's like if they have a phone, it's right there. They're like, how do we address this? So, of course, me being the childless man who probably for the best for society, I stepped, you know, occasionally I give helpful advice, PSAs on this podcast, but my suggestion to them is that, look, say you're going to go to a porn site and you're going to see a lot of anal sex videos, son. And let me tell you that the amount of those in comparison with reality, they're like Elizabeth Warren voters. There's much more of it online than in actual practice. Oh, yeah, kids. And social media, most of it is a complete cesspool. And striving to be popular there is just a complete waste of your time. So anyway, I'll just move along to something that'll make me a lot happier, which is Family Feud, which occupies a special place in my heart in the list of game shows through the years. I mean, so many of them that I could name that I watched as a kid. I'd show them in the daytime on the USA Network. Family Feud wasn't one of them because it was on, I think it was on, well, I'll get into the whole history of that a little bit later because it was on syndicated channels as well. The $25,000 and then $100,000 pyramid with Dick Clark, which taught me the value of being able to add numbers really fast, like $50, $150, $200, $750. Dick Clark would add that up after the final round. Price is Right, mornings, 11 a.m. on CBS. Pressure Luck, I think that was one of the USA Network ones. But Family Feud is something that even though it actually went away for a little while, in my childhood, because it wasn't on the air from 1985 to 1988. Maybe they showed reruns. I don't necessarily remember. The show originally got its start in July of 1976, just after the bicentennial, on the ABC television network. Similar to what they would do later on with Wheel of Fortune and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, there was a daytime edition, which was the network version, and then the syndicated version that could go out to whatever stations wanted, the same way they would buy like Superstars of Wrestling or whatever, that would generally air at night.
With the shot of Family Feud, Richard Dawson.
Unlike a show like Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, Price is Right, the host of Family Feud has turned over quite a bit over the years, particularly in this century. It's not a situation where Pat Sajak gets the job in like 83 or 84 and he's still there today. Ditto Alex Trebek on Jeopardy. Bob Barker was on Price is Right from 71 through 2007. So some of these guys hang around for quite a while. But Family Feud, for whatever reason, you saw a lot of turnover, almost like they were senators at a certain point, like they would just serve one term, or Virginia governors, I guess, because they're term limited to one term. Now, the most famous, of course, is Richard Dick Dawson, who kind of rose to fame as, well, he was an actor. He was in The Running Man and other movies. You don't really think of him as that. You think of him as being on these game shows. And he was on The Match Game prior to this and was a bit of a prima donna on that show because he thought he was the star of that when really CNR, Charles Nelson Reilly, was much, much funnier than him. And he would have tantrums on set. But eventually he leaves that, starts hosting Family Feud when it comes on the air in 1976. And the thing that he's most famous for is the kissing of the female contestants, which all started not because he was a creep, although some people feel that Richard Dawson kind of was. And I mean, it did get a little weird after a while. With, you know, how you kiss every single female contestant. It didn't matter if it was like some like 19-year-old model daughter or whatever, or if it was like some 71-year-old blue hair. I mean, so I guess he was an equal opportunity, whatever you really want to call it. But he did this to calm down a contestant back in the early days of the show, and it was something that he just kept doing. What's interesting, though, is he met one of his wives on the show who was a 20-something daughter of a family that was a contestant in 1981, and he asked for permission to get her number off the list from when they applied to be on the show, which sounds very much like Jerry Seinfeld getting the girl's phone number off the AIDS list from that episode of Seinfeld. Rest in peace, Jerry Stiller. But that is actually what happened. But like I said, Dawson, kind of a prima donna on Match Game, and Family Feud was no exception. He was constantly at war with the producers and the director of the show. Sometimes he would kind of cut loose and cause them to have to edit stuff, which when you're working on a game show or when you're producing it, they like to do it like in order and then do it so that they don't have to make very many edits. They don't want to have to go back and cut a bunch of stuff out in order to make it fit for time. Now, eventually, 1985 rolls around, and the show gets canceled, and Richard Dawson probably was happy to go off and do something else, such as The Running Man. But eventually, like all great American institutions that stand the test of time, Family Feud, like the Brady Bunch, is brought back in 1988. They brought back A Very Brady Christmas, and Family Feud came back with a different host, Ray Combs, on CBS and in syndication as well. And Combs had kind of a different background. He's the one that is most associated with wrestling. I mean, he's the guy who's hosting the two shows that I'm going to get into today. And he was on WrestleMania 8 and in 1993 Survivor Series as a ring announcer. And he was a comic in Hollywood, one of those who would warm up the crowd before they would tape a television show. And he was the warm-up comic for The Golden Girls and A-Men, which is kind of a peculiar thing, but that both of those are NBC shows. Fun fact that I only learned in my research for the show that Ray Combs, not surprisingly considering how unknown he was not the first choice for the show. In fact, they did a few test shows with a different host, former Hall of Fame quarterback Joe Namath.
I want to kiss you.
They already had 9 years of Dick Dawson kissing all the female contestants, so they figured, maybe we shouldn't go with Namath. Maybe we should go in a different direction. And that is how Combs ended up getting the gig. And personally, he's my favorite host of Family Feud that there was. He lasted for 6 years on there. Maybe it's his involvement in wrestling, but there was a certain humor to him. He never took himself too seriously, and he was a total professional doing the show, at least until the very end, because they kind of did him dirty. The ratings for the show had started to decline towards the end of his run. And what happened was they fired him before they were actually done taping the shows in the 93-94 TV season. But like a true professional does, he went in and he hosted the show the rest of the way, only allowing for one unprofessional moment on his way out when a woman was playing the second round of Fast Money and did absolutely terribly.
Turn around, let's see how you did. I feel so small right now. Rick, don't feel bad. You're going to get $5 a point. You might have to write us a check. Bricklayers, you? Bricks would have been number one. Don't worry about it. You're going to get a few in the head from your family on the way home. Best kind of place to people watch it. Blank. You said TV. Survey said? Shopping mall. Okay. A kind of fly? You didn't know. Horsefly would have been number one. Shopping mall is a place to people watch. Mothers and daughters fight over, you said? Husband. Survey said? Zero. You know, I've done this show for 6 years, and this could be the first time that I had a person that actually got no points, and I think it's a damn fine way to go out. Thought I was a loser till you walked up here. You made me feel like a man, Jim. Give me your hand. Something that should be built to last, you said?
The joking around there is harmless. I don't consider that unprofessional. I mean, that's pretty much what game show hosts are supposed to do. When they came back from commercial, he had walked off the set rather than hanging around and doing the fake talking with the family that you can kind of see as the credits roll. And that was the last time he was on Family Feud. And a lot is made about what happened to him afterwards, where he had financial issues. He owned a couple of comedy clubs in Cincinnati that went under. He tried hosting another show that flopped. He and his wife got divorced, and eventually he killed himself, and this is all laid out in the Family Feud East Real Hollywood story. It really makes me sad, because I liked him quite a bit, and I thought he was a hell of a host, and it's sad that, you know, he couldn't find anything else, you know, in that 2 years. Show did not actually get canceled when Ray Combs got let go. Instead, they went back to Richard Dawson for another year, and that was how they were able to sell the show, based on, hey, the original host is back, and on the feeling of nostalgia. But it only lasted a year, and Dawson was back out, and Family Feud was once again off the air. When I think back, it's like, wow, so it wasn't there for a couple of years, but again, it comes back up a few years later, in the late 90s, when Louis Anderson becomes the host of Family Feud. I don't want to say he's my least favorite host, but I think he was particularly ill-suited for it. And like Ray Combs, he was not the first choice. They wanted to get Dolly Parton to host Family Feud. Personally, I would have hired the American Dream Dusty Rhodes because he would have been so perfect for it, like I said before. But Louis Anderson ended up getting the gig instead of Dusty Rhodes, even though they do cut very similar figures. The only thing that I remember about Louis Anderson hosting Family Feud was, I don't know if they did this more than once because I only watched Mad TV occasionally, but when Will Sasso was doing the Louis Anderson hosting Family Feud, I think the skit was called Racist Family Feud.
Dear Lord, if you have any mercy in your heart, please just kill me right now. Come on, do it! Strike me down, please! All right, I guess he's busy. Play the feud, hey!
After Louis, it was a couple of familiar TV faces who did four-year stints as Family Feud host. Richard Karn from 02 to 06, who I thought was extremely bland and a rather uninspired choice for the role. Not that he was bad or anything, it's just that I don't think he was particularly suited for the role. And from 06 to 2010, John O'Hurley, who you probably remember from Seinfeld as Jay Peterman. And I thought he was really good. It would always amuse me during that post-show thing where he's supposed to be walking around talking to the contestants. He would just walk aimlessly some of the times and really not be talking to anybody. Then in 2010, the current host of Family Feud, Steve Harvey. So now he's been there for 10 years. And when Steve Harvey, say what you want about him, how he screwed up that pageant the one time by reading the wrong name. But apparently, people like him because the ratings have really jumped for Family Feud over the last 10 years. I mean, it's not something that I've followed particularly closely, but there's a reason why the guy has hung on to the job, whereas all these other people in the past have, you know, kind of come and gone. And then I think now he's the longest serving, if he's 10 years in now, he's the longest serving host of Family Feud because Dawson was there for 9 and everybody else was far less than that. Okay, let me get down to the crux of why this would even be on the show. Wrestling on Family Feud, like I said, it all goes back to Ray Combs, who was definitely a wrestling fan, I think, and that's why he was willing to do this. And I'm sure that the ratings were good for this, otherwise they wouldn't have kept going back to it. And they would always do stuff like, they actually did one in 1983 when Dawson was still there, where it was other game show hosts versus the announcers on those programs, which I think is kind of fun. But they would have, you know, athletes and whoever. The thing with wrestling and Ray Combs being, you know, a comedian, comedians and wrestlers, I think, have a certain kinship where, I mean, well, to start with, Dolph Ziggler sucks at both of them. But you're in each profession, you're traveling from town to town. You have this constant paranoia of what your spot is. You know, a comedian, like, is your stuff good? And in wrestling, is somebody going to pass me? I guess in comedy, it would be, you know, is somebody, you know, going to steal my stuff or whatever? Stealing jokes, stealing finishing moves. You know, it's all sort of the same. You know, comedians and wrestlers, very much, and I think that's why Combs saw eye to eye with them. Now, Combs was a pretty small dude, so he was never going to be a professional wrestler. And like I said, I liked him the best because he was easygoing and funny and was devoid of drama. But maybe it's also because he was the host of the show between when I was like 9 and 14 years old. I mean, that's always, you know, a thing that goes into, oh, I like that best, or I like that band's album the most because it came out when I was in high school. I mean, why else would I like the Monster album best by R.E.M.? Oh, gee, it came out when I was a freshman in high school. I'm shocked. And the great thing about these episodes is these wrestlers in this environment are allowed to maybe cut loose a little bit, maybe show a little bit of that personality. Now, Randy Savage, who is representing the WWF on the babyface side, he might be staying in character the entire time because that is what Randy Savage was. But isn't it funny that we're going to be able to see, I don't know, the Repo Man and Papa Shango on Family Feud? I mean, WrestleCrap inducted this into their, you know, WrestleCrap Hall of Fame, whatever it is that they call it. Like, are you kidding me? This stuff is gold. I will watch this again and again. What am I supposed to do? Watch like Raw from 6 months ago where they're all freaking the same? All right, you know, lay off the modern product. But even take like, I don't know, just your average, you know, fall of 96 Raw. Like even when I like the product, like, okay, here's this game show that is 20 minutes and is pretty damn entertaining, and you get to see Kevin Nash facing I shouldn't blow up my joke like this later, but a face-off between Kevin Nash and Jackie Stallone. Or like the thing that I tweeted out earlier this week, the Macho Man Randy Savage and Shawn Michaels one-on-one on a face-off. And I guess this would be officiated by Ray Combs. He would be the special referee. So WWF did faces versus heels in their case, and WCW in their shows, I guess it would change occasionally, although WWF had the WBF guys on there once. Not really as interested in that. And WCW facing off against the members of the, you know, slowly dying GLOW promotion. Now, I should probably mention this for anybody who is not familiar with the rules of Family Feud. And they would tinker with stuff. We'll actually see that in the WWF episode where they play this bullseye game that was, you know, kind of weird where you're looking for number one answers. A 100 person survey, and they'll put the top anywhere from 3 to 7 answers on the board. They'll have the face off where you have whoever gets a higher answer gets control of the board, and they get 3 strikes. So if you go down the row of the 5 people on each side, and if 3 answers are not on the board, that's 3 strikes. The other team can attempt to steal the pot based on it, the dollars correspond to the number of people in the survey. And then there's a double points round and a triple points round. And I'm maybe being simplistic about it. I mean, it's Family Feud, for God's sakes. And then they advance to Fast Money, which I played the little bit of from the last Ray Combs episode, where 5 questions in either, I think it's 15 or 20 seconds. So you get 20 seconds for the second round, which I think is really, really tight. And it makes Fast Money really, really difficult to win because they got to get 200 over 10 questions. So you got to score 20 per question. And it can be rather difficult. You almost have to get the top 2 answers on for each question in order to have a real chance. So, wow, this is definitely my longest intro ever. But, you know, it's Family Feud. It's all in good fun, and I'm certainly enjoying this. So, let's play the feud!
Look out, it's 7:30's worst kept secret.
You've heard of this, have you?
Everybody's talking about the show where consenting adults play games with Richard Dawson. You just can't lose.
Sometimes I don't think it's worth it.
2 families squaring off. With a host who always knows when to quit.
Family's a bummer.
Be there for the showdown at sundown with the quickest lip in the West.
This is not the Golden Show.
It's the Family Feud, Monday through Thursday at 7:30 here on 7.
1992 was not a good year for the WWF from a business perspective, whether it be, oh, I don't know, the sex scandal, the steroid scandal, or just the general declining business of professional wrestling in the United States. But that didn't stop them from getting a full week on Family Feud in February of 1993. And we got the Faces of Good versus the Mercenaries of Evil. I always love how they phrase, you know, sort of the good guy versus bad guy thing in professional wrestling. And I'm glad that they made them do the pose in the fake living room thing that's in the little window behind where their podium or where their stand is going to be, and they all come out as they're introduced. So, as I said, the Macho Man Randy Savage is the captain of one team, who would be the first person in the line, and his teammates are the Reverend Slick, Crush, this would be Kona Crush, Tatanka, and the Big Boss Man, which I thought was rather unusual because he's not on WrestleMania 9, and you barely see him at all after the 1993 Royal Rumble, where he loses to Bam Bam Bigelow. On the other side, you have the Intercontinental Champion, Shawn Michaels, and then this crew behind him is just so delightful to see it on a game show. Papa Shango, Repo Man, IRS, and Jimmy Hart. So it's not long before Jimmy Hart goes babyface and, you know, joins up with Hulk Hogan. So seeing him here with IRS, this is very much near the end. And February would be the month for sweeps, and this is a very sweepsy type thing to do. It's why on game shows, just like how on wrestling, you would see more feature matches in February, May, and November. On game shows, they're going to turn it up in those months as well. Same for like Jeopardy. You're going to see your, you know, best on best tournaments in one of those 3 months, and you're going to have like the wacky stuff on Wheel of Fortune, all of that. And this is the last show of that week. The way it's labeled on YouTube is WWF on Family Feud number 5. And the last show of the week is always interesting to me going back through history, because they tape these all in one day, in all likelihood. Because when they make a game show, they don't like to waste time doing this. They want to do as much as they can, as quickly as they can. And sometimes those Friday shows would, well, especially on the match game where you got the booze flowing freely and you got stuff like Charles Nelson Reilly walking around like a Nazi when he was probably drunk, because it was the match game question was the third and he wrote Reich, and then when the person matched, he goose-stepped around the studio. I believe that episode is now banned from the Game Show Network. It's Gene Woods on the intro for Family Feud who introduces the host and all. He was born in Quincy, Massachusetts in 1925. Nice to see local boy represented in Hollywood, because, you know, there's not enough people from the Boston area out there. He passed away in May of 2004, which, you know, I see that. I just say, man, he didn't live long enough to see the Red Sox win it all, 1925 to May of 2004.
Welcome to the feud. It's a very special feud. If you've been watching, we have two great teams who've battled it out all week for the chance to win up to $20,000 on each show for their favorite charity. Right now it stands 2 games for the forces of evil, 2 games for the forces of good.
So this is a bragging rights thing, not unlike Raw versus SmackDown, that phony baloney crap that they do with Survivor Series whenever there's a brand split. And I have to wonder, because it's 2-2 going in to the Friday show, if they actually booked it so that each side would win twice, because it wouldn't be very interesting if the heels won all four leading up to this. I mean, it would kind of make one side look really, really stupid. So I wonder if maybe, you know, something is this entire thing fake? I expect John Stossel to just march on to say, you know what? I think this is fake. You, John Stossel. Anyway, the forces of good are playing for the headlock on hunger, which they were promoting heavily on WWF television at the time, and the forces of evil playing for the Boy Scouts of Las Vegas, which I guess trying to get in with the crowd at the upcoming WrestleMania 9.
Well, the bottom line is, it's nice to be important, but more important to be nice. Vince McMahon, World Wrestling Federation, and the Red Cross are the greatest tag team in the world because we're putting a headlock on hunger, the Somalian relief effort, yeah!
The fact that Randy Savage is so freewheeling makes him a great professional wrestler, but as a contestant on a game show, as I said, they hate it when people run long like that. He could have just said, yeah, the headlock on hunger in conjunction with the Red Cross. So that he took 13 seconds to say what could have been said in 4 or 5, and it's precious seconds on these sorts of shows. So HBK is the leader on the other side. Like I said, he's the Intercontinental Champion. And now they go to the bullseye round, which is something that they added in 1992. And when you have this where they're raising money for charity, it kind of makes sense. And this is where I took the picture of the Shawn Michaels, Randy Savage one-on-one. There's no handshake. Randy holds out his hand and Shawn does the Ric Flair, you know, put his hand through his hair thing. And we get our first question. And you got to get the number one answer in order to get that bullseye.
We ask 100 people, name a reason people stay in a job, even if it's a dull job. For $1,000, Sean.
Money.
Is money the bullseye? Bullseye! Bad guy filled his $6,000 bank.
Jeez, I'm surprised Sean didn't stomp his foot 4 times before he actually rang in. Money, that's a pretty good answer. I mean, this is a guy who would preside over 95, 96 WWF as one of the top guys during one of the more dull periods of their history. So, you know, he learned a lot about that. So we go to our second person, and it's Tatanka against Jimmy Hart. And now the stakes go up a little bit for each one, which is kind of funny because the way you order it in Family Feud, usually the person at the end, you want to stick the biggest dullard there. But in this case, you know, the money's going to keep going up. So Tatanka and Jimmy Hart for $2,000.
Tell me something young children like to jump on.
Jimmy.
Trampoline.
Mouth of the South said $2,000 with trampoline. 100 people surveyed, Chief. Something young children like to jump on. Quickly. Don't say it. I got 6 kids. Have to be bed. What is the bullseye? Bad, yeah, we didn't know it.
I think trampoline might have won if it was today, because it seems to be a lot more prevalent in today's society. I think because they're a lot safer than they used to be, because you have those nets along the outside of them. Tatanka was terrible this entire week on Family Feud, if I do say so myself. This is not exactly his forte. One of the things, and this goes back years, my dearest friend Merrill, They had this thing at the Bruins games when I wasn't living here, but he had season tickets at the time, where they would do Family Feud. And every single time they would ask the question on the Jumbotron, he would yell out hookers, no matter what the question was. And that's a bit that has persisted now for 2 decades, and it always works. Like, name something that little kids like to jump on. Hookers! I mean, it's always funny. So we go to the third person, the delightful matchup of Crush versus IRS for $3,000.
Name something a really strict father might not like about his son's appearance. Crush?
Haircut.
Is haircut the bullseye? Right on target!
All right, here's the best part about that. We know that IRS is a complete failure as a father, because he raised Bray Wyatt, and I guess Bo Dallas too, but I'm more focused on Bray Wyatt and his awful, atrocious hair by any standard in any era. And Crush is the guy who gets this, which is funny because he literally has a mullet that reminds me of, like, Niagara Falls, by the way. The hair is just coming down the back. It's basically like the world's largest waterfall. So we go to the fourth person in line, and this would be the Big Boss Man against the Repo Man, which is a very fun matchup because, remember, the Big Boss Man was asked to repossess the $1 million belt from Jake the Snake and refused to do it because he didn't want to take a payoff or whatever. But the Repo Man in 1991 would eventually help DiBiase regain possession of the $1 million belt, defeating Virgil on the Survivor Series Showdown.
We ask 100 married women this question. Tell me something that you still ask your mother's advice about. Big Boss Man.
Hey.
You still ask your mother's advice about sex for $4,000. Repo Man, listen to the question that we ask 100 married women. Tell me something that you still ask your mother's advice about.
An anniversary present.
Is anniversary present number one? About your husband, maybe? What was the bullseye? Health problems, not said. Here we go.
Wasn't that funny that the Big Boss Man's mother gets obliquely brought up on a 1993 episode of Family Feud, like 2.5 years after Boss Man's mother ends up the focus of a storyline with Bobby Heenan constantly making fun of her? Repo Man, anniversary. Now, it's not the worst answer, but I can see why health issues. But Boss Man saying about sex, like, what is wrong with him? Has he been drinking? Like I said, those Friday shows could get a little bit weird. And Boss Man, believe me, this is far from the last weird answer he would give on this show. So our last people in line is Slick and Papa Shango in a battle of religions. Christianity versus voodoo.
Name something that sticks to you on a muggy day. You have control, Reverend Slick.
Your clothes.
Is clothes worth $5,000?
Would have been kind of embarrassing if Slick had gotten the question about clothes wrong. I mean, the man knows his threads, And he came up through some muggy climates. I mean, he grew up in Texas. He's from, worked in the Central States promotion. So Kansas City, it can get pretty damn muggy there. So the good guys end up with $13,000 and the bad guys end up with $6,000. Although this is not germane to the way the game is played. It's still going to be the normal game, the race to 300. So we go into the game proper. And the Macho Man and Shawn Michaels, who, by the way, are both in red. You know, they could have color coordinated a little. Come on, pal. You can't both wear red. We don't have a Backlund Valentine thing where the wrong guy gets his hand raised. But, of course, they're dressed differently enough. Top five answers are on the board for this one.
Name something you might overdo which gives you a headache. Shawn.
Drinking.
Did our survey say drinking? Number one!
I'm sure if this had been a few years later, Sean's answer would have been either pills or one Marine in Syracuse. I can't tell which one. So the heel side, the mercenaries of evil get control of the board. Jimmy says eating. I don't know. I guess it would be ice cream that he might have been thinking of there. But that is strike one, so it's on to IRS, who gives a so on-brand answer for him. Reading. It is as boring as it sounds, but 12 people in the survey said it is the number three answer, so I guess I can't crap on him too much for that. And now it's time for the Repo Man.
Repo Man.
How about too much heat?
Is too much heat going to give you a headache on the survey? Strike. Number two, think of a steal.
I think Repo was talking about heat in the locker room and was just kind of talking in that Carney code and just sort of forgetting where he was in the fifth episode of the week. So it's all up to Papa Shango. And you think, is this the guy I really want answering a question when things are on the line?
Papa Shango, name something you might do, overdo, which gives you a headache.
How about yelling?
Show me yelling to stay alive. First bank could be stolen and your tactic could have worked.
If I'm holding out hope for anybody to say hookers or strippers on this show, it would be Papa Shango. Mainly because he would go on to become the godfather, and Charles Wright in real life owned a strip club after wrestling. Of course, this is before all that, but still, he's still the greatest hope I have for saying that. Though I should mention that Family Feud kind of taken more of an adult tack in the last 10 years with Steve Harvey, which I think has made it maybe a little bit more popular. Let's call it the Family Feud Attitude Era that's been going on. The forces of good have a chance to steal, and the way they do things is Combs will go up the line with Slick at the end and Boss Man. By the way, nice to see Slick and Boss Man back together, reunited on television for the first time in over 3 years. But ultimately, it's up to Randy Savage to answer the question.
You overwork, you get a headache.
Exercise
overdue.
Work,
exercise, over-exercise. Work, exercise. For the steal, Macho Man, with your teammates or on your own.
Overwork.
What do you say?
Overwork. Yeah.
Show me a steal with overwork for a headache. The bank stays.
Because they only managed to get 2 out of 5 on the board, they only end up with $58 towards the ultimate goal of 300. So answers 2, 4, and 5 are left on the board, and they reveal them. Number 2 being exercise, which Slick and the Boss Man were saying that Macho Man should have said, so they're a little bit upset. Number 4, operate a computer, which I can understand. Back in those days, they didn't exactly make it so that it was easier on the eyes to look at for long periods of time. And number 5, too many sweets, which is very close to what Jimmy Hart was saying, but I guess they weren't going to give it to him.
We're feuding, and right now, our bad guys, 58 points, leading the good boys, 0. It's time for another face-off. Here comes the tough guy. Jimmy says peace, once again trying to make friends with his opponent as we double. This point value, the top 5 answers on the board to a question we ask 100 average Americans. Name something specific that people punch.
Hookers.
Jimmy.
Punching bag.
Is a bag on our survey. Number one.
Well, Jimmy Hart's a manager, but he didn't call his guys the family like he did in Memphis. So I was thinking the Heenan family would have been natural for Family Feud, especially in 1990. I think that that would have been the best crew with Mr. Perfect, Rick Rude, the Barbarian, and Haku. I think those four, with Heenan as the lead guy, cracking jokes, mixing it up with Ray Combs, that certainly would have been good. It would have been like Survivor Series 93 ahead of time. So the Mercenaries of Evil, I keep wanting to call them the Forces of Evil, have the board. And, of course, it's IRS's turn. Name something you'd punch.
Each other.
Could each other be one of our answers?
Well, if you had raised Bray Wyatt, you would probably want to punch others as well because you'd be upset about how you performed as a parent. They go to Repo Man. He says door or wall, which ends up being the number five answer. There's nine people, so a lot of Kevin Browns out there. It's the guy who broke his hand punching, I think it was the dugout wall at one point, and talked everybody the important lesson. If you're a baseball pitcher, don't throw punches with your pitching hand. You know, try to do it with your offhand. Because that's not your moneymaker. So Papa Shango now, and I don't think I've mentioned this, how he doesn't have any makeup on. I guess it was a little too scary, a little too real for the Family Feud audience.
Yeah, I got this.
What is?
Time clock.
Yeah! I like that.
All right.
I don't.
Who am I to criticize a fine man that... You got a problem with Papa Shango, take it up with him. Show me time clock.
It was like when the fifth person on one side gives a really good answer, and then they kind of step back and bask in the applause of everybody because he did a good job. And the fact that it's Papa Shango makes it even funnier. But time clock, yeah, I definitely wouldn't have thought of that one particularly. As they go to Shawn Michaels at the front, he says air, like in shadow boxing, and that is strike one. Jimmy Hart can't come up with anything. He has like his head in his hands. It's pretty lame considering he had a lot of time to think about it. But IRS, again, get some bizarre answers. And I don't know if it's that fifth show of the week disease or something. I keep wondering, is he booking WCW with this kind of answer?
What do you say, IRS?
A windshield.
Is it windshield?
Who punches a windshield? That's like the only thing dumber than having Goldberg punch the window of the limousine. I mean, because windshields are more sturdy glass than what you would have on just the regular windows in a car. So we go across to the Forces of Good, and as they're suggesting things that the Macho Man should say to Steel, the Big Boss Man undoubtedly wins the Paul Lynde Award for batshit moment on the Friday show.
The Macho Man, something that people punch.
A ticket.
Punch a ticket?
Their spouse.
The weirdest thing about it is there's a small beat and then the crowd laughs, which is just really disturbing on a number of levels. But when it comes up to Savage, the first answer, everybody else said ticket other than Boss Man. And that is a pretty good answer, but...
A ticket, yeah.
Is it a steal with a ticket?
No!
The main stage of the Forces of Evil, Macho Man, People Punch, number two.
I don't know how much Randy Savage was into his own merch, but he had a wrestling buddy years before, so I don't know. He probably didn't know about that, wasn't thinking about it, but as I said earlier, Randy Savage might not be so good at Family Feud.
100 people answered. Who do you want never to see the results of your IQ test? IRS.
Hookers.
His spouse on the survey. Number one, and you need to grasp at a steal.
That's now three straight times the heels have gained control. So it's kind of like you're setting up like a wrestling match where there's this extended heat segment, and then maybe the baby faces will have a comeback, or perhaps it'll get cut off. Who knows? So Repo Man is next in line. He says friends, which is a good enough answer, but that is strike one. And on to the very apparently underrated and underappreciated Papa Shango.
Who do you want never to see the results of your IQ test?
About your parents.
Maybe parents. Yeah. Could be your bank.
I actually shouldn't be surprised that Papa Shango is so good at this, because I have this theory from seeing enough Family Feud over the years, And if you've watched it, especially in the last 10, 15 years, you'd notice this as well, that African-American families do way better on Family Feud. And I attribute that to the fact that they are much more in touch with reality than, like, some white people from, like, suburban Illinois. They're more in touch with how the world works and how people would answer surveys. That's just my theory on why that is. I think it could be any number of different reasons, or who really knows what it is. So Shawn Michaels says teachers, and that is strike number two. And Jimmy Hart says his boss, which turns out to be the number two answer. So the number three answer is still up on the board. And we once again to Irwin R. Scheister.
Come on, keep you going there, IRS. Who would you want never to see the results of your IQ test?
Your children.
Is children going to keep you alive? It does, and one answer.
Hell yeah, I wouldn't want Bray Wyatt to see the results of my IQ test. Then again, I don't want Bray Wyatt to see much of anything. So it's all up to Repo Man. Can he get the number five answer on the board, which is pretty tricky? I mean, usually your mind goes to the top things. There's a certain skill inherent with getting the number five answer.
The Repo Man, who do you want to never see the results of your IQ test or the game?
Your college.
Your college? Where yep. You go to school?
Right.
Well, you could have a chance to steal over there. Let me see. For the game, college. It is your game.
That's a game show trope I absolutely love, when the host shits on the contestant's answer. See it occasionally on Jeopardy. I think somebody has made like a YouTube montage of Alex Trebek just like very subtly making fun of the contestants. And Family Feud, Steve Harvey has done a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, as I said, Family Feud Attitude Era. And Steve Harvey, you know, kind of making faces of stuff that's going on. A lot of weird stuff happening. But the forces of good have a chance to steal. But it's the number five answer, so it's pretty tough. I don't have a whole lot of faith in them.
Colleague,
you never want to see the results of
your in-laws.
Team. In-laws, colleagues.
Friends,
in-laws, colleagues. Tell him, Macho Man, you may go with them, but you have to give me number five.
In-laws.
Feel the electricity with in-laws.
If it's there, you have stolen this question and you're still alive, and we're going with another face-off. If not, the bragging rights go to the bad boy. Is number five in-laws. No, the bad guy has won this game, and the Macho Man eases this time. What answer, Macho Man? Number five. You never want to see your IQ test. Siblings, your brothers, your sisters.
Man, and you would have thought Savage would have gotten that right, considering that his brother is literally a genius, Lanny Poffo. But he had just gone through a divorce with Elizabeth, so maybe her side of the family was on his mind, and he didn't really care for all of them. Well, so that means the bad guys won in a clean sweep here in the fifth game of the week, and they have to decide which two are going to play Fast Money. And they're going to go with IRS for round one and Shawn Michaels for round two. Now, I probably would have flipped the two, and I would have chosen Jimmy Hart instead. Actually, Jimmy Hart wasn't all that great during the show. I would have gone Papa Shango round one, IRS round two. He had two different sort of perspectives on things. And Papa Shango seems to have a knack today. He seems to have it going on. But I do think you need maybe the IRS. I don't know how quick he is on his feet, though. And you kind of want to have the quicker guy for round two. So, I don't know. Looking at that side, it's hard to say. And as I said, Fast Money is deceptively difficult, where you've basically got to get the top two answers for all five questions in order to have a good chance. 15 seconds for the first round is pretty damn tight. They don't start the clock until Ray Combs is done reading the first question. Second person gets 20 seconds, but obviously you're going to end up repeating some answers. So the second person has to assume that the first person is smart enough to say the first answer, and you want to have a good second answer to go with it. So let's see how IRS did. You got to get to 200, and because the second round is harder because you can't repeat answers, my theory is you always want to get to somewhere between 115 and 125 to give yourself the best chance.
IRS, we ask 100 people these five questions. Tell me a sport whose players need a lot of patience and self-control.
Golf.
Something you eat that makes you feel good.
Chocolate.
How long a new car smells new?
About a month.
A breed of dog that slobbers.
Pass.
A country famous for its athletes.
United States.
Turn around, you got four of the five.
Just going to guess that Mike Rotunda did not grow up with dogs, because I think he would have at least named a breed, no matter how bad. But some of his answers were good. Golf is definitely what I would have said. I would have said nachos for something to eat to make me feel better. But then again, this being 1993, nachos might not have had the same cachet. You know, people making Mexican food jokes on WWF television and all. I would have said 3 months for the new car. Bulldog is what I would have said for slobbering dog, because, you know, you're thinking of Davey Boy Smith, even though he had just, you know, gotten fired a few months before. And the United States for athletes. That question is almost designed into tricking you into saying another country, but the most famous athletes are from the United States.
Players need a lot of patience and self-control, you said. You'd like to see golf survey said. 47! Woo! Boy Scouts like that. You can eat that makes you feel good. You chose chocolate. I guess that's all candy. Survey said 25.
Good job, brother.
How long a new car smells new? You said 1 month. Survey said 18.
All right.
Up to 90. You got stuck on a breed of dog that slobbers and we'll keep you out of this, macho man. You pass, got nothing. A country famous for its athletes, you said. The United States, what did the survey say? Bam! 32. Back with your teammates, Shawn Michaels.
IRS did a pretty good job getting to 122 with only four answers. Just makes you wonder if they would be in a much better position if he had just blurted out the name of any dog breed. You know, at least give yourself a chance. So now the question is, will Shawn Michaels lay down and do the job to Fast Money? Or is he going to lose his smile 10 seconds in? Who really knows?
Good luck. Settle down, woman. Just a brand new tie. I just got it. We ask 100 people these questions. Tell me a sport whose players need a lot of patience and self-control.
Golf.
Try again.
Tennis.
Something you eat that makes you feel good.
Pussy.
How long a new car smells new?
A month.
Try again.
2 months.
A breed of dog that slobbers.
Sharpei.
A country famous for its athletes.
America.
Try again.
Russia.
Turn around here.
Kind of funny how Sean managed to match IRS's answers 3 out of 4 times, but this ain't the match game. You've got to think of maybe the second best answer and be a little bit counterintuitive, especially for something like game you need a lot of patience for. Most people would blurt out golf. That's why it got 47 points. So you go to your next option. You got to be fast on your feet. Now, I don't know if I would take the partying, pilled up guy and put him on second. But then again, I hate Shawn Michaels. And also, Sharpei? Really? You pick like an obscure dog breed? Just say a more common dog breed and you're liable to get a better score, even if it doesn't slobber as much. You gotta understand how the game works.
Hello? You play to win the game.
Yeah, I'd rather have Herm Edwards going second in Fast Money than Shawn Michaels, but he's not a WWF superstar and he's not getting a push as the Intercontinental Champion, so let's see how Sean did.
A sport whose players need a lot of patience and self-control. Your second choice. Tennis survey said 15. Number one was golf, given by your partner. Something you eat that makes you feel good. Many people love steak. Survey said 0. Ice cream was number one. Steak, not so bad. New car smells new for you. 2 months. Survey said 11, inching up. 6 months would have been number one. You need 2 big finishes.
Now, wait a minute, Ray. We're talking about Shawn Michaels, the modern-day architect of NXT main event style. So it's going to be more than 2 big finishes. It's going to be about 15 false finishes and then 8 big finishes.
How'd you do with a breed of dog that slobbers? Many people own the popular sloppering Sharpei.
True, though.
I know it's true. Survey said 0. St. Bernard was number one. Comes down to this. A country famous for its athletes. You said Russia. Did 52 people say it? For $6,000, what did the survey say? The number one answer, former Soviet Union, and $5 a point going. You got it. 42 points, my man. Come out here and shake his hand. You did it. You're very best. 950, the big boy bottom. But the Boy Scouts of America still get some cash. You're coming right back with great wrestlers in the feud after this.
See, Sean was thinking like a wrestler with the earlier steak answer. Name something that you eat that makes you feel good. Like, yeah, wrestlers eat a lot of steak, but that's not something that everyday people, the type of people who are going to be asked the question for the survey, are going to say. So, of course, he gets 0 points out of it and comes within 10 of winning, and that question is probably what cost him. That's why even Papa Shango going second, I think, would have been better in this spot. So they wrap up, they're all on the set, and Papa Shango's got Ray Combs in a headlock. And I'm giving Shango the number one star here. He really surprised me with some of his ability on this. I think we should have gotten Super Push Shango 93 out of it.
It is a shooting extravaganza. We have the WCW men headed right now by Sid Vicious.
Yes, there are other WCW episodes on Family Feud where Sting is the team captain, but give me Father Sid any day of the week. I am ready to play the feud. Oh, this is going to be magical. It's not only because it's WCW and it's just inherently funnier by its nature, but Sid, the crew that they sent with Sid, I mean, this is late 1990. WCW is when I'm estimating this based on who is on his team. I mean, you got some characters.
I got Dirty Dutch Mantel from Old Prof, Texas.
It looks like he just took a shower.
He's also, helps commentate those TV shows at WCW with the number one TV man right there, Tony Savini.
Well, who else did you bring? Who's this?
One half of Master Blaster Steel.
Yes, and then
and
Tony.
And we got that crazy Kevin Sullivan.
That's right! Yeah, right.
In 1992, USA Basketball sent 11 All-Stars from the NBA and Christian Laettner to represent the United States at the Barcelona Olympics and to reclaim the place on the top of the basketball mountain in the world. And until then, this is the greatest team ever assembled. Sid Vicious, Dutch Mantel, Master Blaster Steel, who of course is Kevin Nash, and thankfully I'll remember his name because there isn't the other guy around, Tony Schiavone and Kevin Sullivan. So they have returned from last week as well. They're playing for the Starlight Children's Foundation, so very good cause there. So there's a lot of cuts in this video, and unfortunately it's not the complete episode, and not only is it not the complete episode, it's actually parts of two different episodes, which is fine with me. In fact, we now go to what ended up being the most viral tweet I ever sent out from @GFLTownPod last December, which was this opening face-off here between the woman from GLOW and Sid Vicious, where Sid gets... well, just listen.
First team to 300 will play for the 5,000. We ask 100 people this first question. Woo! All right. Top six answers are on the board. Try to find the most popular answer to this question. Thank you, Steele. Here we go. Name something you usually do after eating a big meal. Sid?
Brush your teeth.
He says he brushes his teeth. It's not there.
It's not that he gets it wrong. I mean, it is a fairly sensible answer, albeit, you know, doesn't feel like a number one type answer, which is what you're looking for. But he turns and gives this what the hell look. Like, how the hell could that have possibly been wrong? I wanted him to powerbomb Ray Combs right there into the face-off thing. That would have been quite an angle. It would have gotten WCW some positive publicity. So Hollywood is the one there for GLOW. I don't know if it's the original Hollywood from the GLOW episode that I did about 2 years ago now. She says use a toothpick. And because Razor Ramon had not yet brought that into style, that is also a strike, which means they now got to go to the second person, which on the WCW side is Dirty Dutch Mantel. And this is where one of my favorite things ever, that Ray Combs just calling him Dirty like it's his first name.
Stay here, Sid. Dirty, here's the question. Name something you usually do after eating a big meal.
I watch TV.
Let me see. Television. It's there, but don't move. Don't move. Stay here. I'm going to the farmer's daughter. Two answers will give you control. Something you usually do after eating a big meal. Quickly.
Exercise.
Show me exercise. Not there. You think of a steel, Hollywood. Nicely done, Dirty. Good job, Sid.
And this brings us to Master Blaster Steel, Kevin Nash, who you could hear making a little bit of noise earlier on, and Ray Combs has to kind of shush him. And what's funny here is, well, I have a lot of crossover, I think, in my audience and the podcast Between the Sheets. Obviously, they have a much bigger audience than I do, and deservedly so, because they've been doing this a hell of a lot longer than me. But they have played this sound clip of Kevin Nash on Family Feud, which, by the way, before I knew that this clip existed and what it was, I always thought it was Sergeant Slaughter saying coffee, because that's whose voice it kind of sounds like. But it's interesting to hear it in the context of the moment, which is when Ray Combs goes down the line, or any host of Family Feud, they generally repeat the question for the benefit of the audience and everybody there. And instead, oh, Steele's just going to blurt it out.
About coffee!
After eating a big meal, coffee.
See, when he says big meal, my mind immediately goes to Thanksgiving. And when my mind goes to Thanksgiving, goes to turkey, goes to tryptophan, and it goes to me having coffee after the meal in order to at least stay awake for a little bit longer than I would have otherwise. So not a bad answer, even though it's a strike. I mean, just because you don't get it right does not mean that it was necessarily a terrible answer. So it's just funny to hear that in the context of the thing. So Tony Schiavone, which, by the way, it's four heels and Tony. It's like, clearly we know who's the babysitter in this group. I mean, imagine poor Tony, who comes back from the WWF earlier in the year. And again, I'm assuming that this is late 1990. Tony's got to babysit Kevin Sullivan, who's probably like the second chaperone. Oh, I guess Dirty Dutch, you know, he had some booking responsibilities in various places. But Tony is there to provide the normalcy, even though he looks so out of place. And Jim Ross was clearly like, I am not doing that show. And that's why we get good-natured Tony instead.
So just think so you can get some points. Number one is there, Tony. Something you usually do.
If you can tell by my girth, it's probably going to be go to sleep.
Sleeping. Number one.
What happened when Tony Schiavone gave the number one answer on Family Feud in 1990? So now it's Kevin Sullivan, who gives a very good answer because, remember, this is 1990, it's a different time.
We put some money in the bank now, $61, something you usually do after eating a big meal.
Smoke.
Okay. Perhaps smoking. There it is, isn't that bank? $66.
Audience seems nonplussed by that answer, but there wasn't the same negative attitude towards smoking in 1990. I mean, that was the year that it was finally banned on domestic flights in the United States. Before, I remember my mother smoking on an airplane in 1986. So I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's kind of an odd studio audience. But maybe Southern California, who knows if it was a little different. I know that myself, when I smoked, you know, if I was at like a diner, I would have one after the meal. So perfectly reasonable answer. Sid says, I have dessert after a big meal because I rule the world. But unfortunately, that's strike two. Because while he might rule the world, apparently Family Feud is something outside of that. This leads to another famous moment in this show, which is Dirty Dutch Mantel, who gives a hilarious, if crude, answer.
The Glow Women are going to try to steal $66.
This is a big, big meal, I imagine.
It's a big meal.
Go to the bathroom.
Oh, how thrilled!
Only Dirty Dutch would say that as soon as he finishes eating, he goes to the bathroom.
Unfortunately, it cuts out before we see if Glow is able to make the steal, although I really don't care about that because I don't want to focus too much time on them. I'm more concerned with the guys on the WCW side because it's so hilarious. And I also, Glow was pretty much dying at that point. Of course, some people thought that WCW was dying, but that was like a common refrain. So Dirty Dutch against Farmer's Daughter now on the face-off for round two.
Name something specific
you would see in every old-time Western movie. Dirty Dutch?
Cowboys.
Let me see a cowboy. Number five, four answers give you control. Something specific you would see in every old-time Western movie.
Horses.
What?
Horses.
Okay, she said horses. Let me see. Number one.
I guess Dutch was thinking ahead to that Desperados gimmick that was going to be put on him the next year. He's saying cowboys instead of horses. Two good answers, though. So the glow gets control of the board. So we're going to cut to the steal attempt, because that is what the video does, as the WCW guys try to figure out what's left on the board is the number two answer and the number four answer.
You would see in every old-time Western movie, Kevin?
Saloon.
Saloon.
Saloon's mine,
Saloon.
Too.
Steal?
Yeah, that's it. Saloon's
all right, Dirty.
Stagecoach.
All right, it's up to you, Sid. With them or out on your own? What are you going to say?
Saloon.
Three
saloons.
Seconds. You have stolen the women's bank. If we see...
a saloon.
Yes, sirree. The WCW takes the bank.
Now, anybody who says that Sid Vicious never drew any money for WCW is completely wrong, because he just won them $66 or whatever it was that went into the bank on their side. So now, for the next round, it is Kevin Nash as Master Blaster Steel against Jackie Stallone. Yes, Sylvester Stallone's mother, who was involved with GLOW.
Name something you pour on food.
Hookers.
Steel?
Milk.
Let me see. Milk. It's there, but four answers beat it, Jackie. Something, name something you pour on food.
What kind of food?
Food that you would eat. All right, don't say anything. The men have...
Definite advantage, WCW, on this question, because it's about food, and with Nash giving them control of the board, the next two guys up are Schiavone and Sullivan, who both of them would probably admit that they really like food. I mean, hell, Tony was alluding to it earlier.
Here we go. Step over here, Steele. Tony, the question. Name something you pour on food.
I would say a cheese sauce.
A cheese sauce. Perhaps a cheese sauce. $6 in the bank. Take it up, Kevin.
Ketchup, ketchup,
he
ketchup.
He says. Might be number one. Ketchup. Number two.
I guess Tony was more into salsa con queso than the rest of the population at that time. With Sullivan saying ketchup, now they got to hit the condiments really, really hard. You know, you got to go mayo, got to go mustard, salt, pepper, all that sort of stuff. So Sid is up next, but he takes it in a different direction.
Something.
Here we go, Sid. Something you pour on food.
Syrup.
Let me see syrup. Number three. Number one is there. Something that you pour on food, Dirty.
Honey.
Let me... Thank you, Dirty, but if you could just answer the question. He says, honey.
Honey's pretty good on food, although I like it more in my tea, especially, you know, if I do have a sore throat from podcasting or whatever. But interesting answer. So it's all up to Master Blaster Steel. The fate of WCW is in Kevin Nash's hands.
Bank, what do you say, Steel?
Please say yes.
Sauce. Let me see spaghetti sauce. All right, can you steal $40?
It cuts out, and it probably doesn't matter, because I don't trust any of the GLOW women to actually execute the steal. So it goes right to the next face-off, which is Tony against Liberty, which, of course, they would base Liberty Bell on for the GLOW Netflix series. I don't know if this is the same Liberty as originally on GLOW, but then again, I could say that about every single person on that side. And I think... Tony may have cheated when he buzzed in. I think his hand went up a little early.
Tony, against Liberty. Here we go. Liberty, would you settle down?
I'll try.
Lose the attitude. Here's the question. Name something a man living on his own might ask his mother how to do around the house. Tony, quickly, vacuum. He said before the buzzer, vacuum. It's not there. Any answer? Something a man living on his own might ask his mother to do around the house.
Clean.
Let me see. Clean. There it is there. Think of a steal.
This is not exactly the most well-played game you'll ever see. They're not going to send the tapes of this to the Family Feud or the Game Show Hall of Fame or what have you. And they cut to WCW going for the steal. And sewing is not a bad answer, but that is actually a strike, so... the pot goes to the glow side. So now we're five deep with these face-offs. I mean, that you can tell the game is running long, and they probably did have to make edits here. Is Kevin Sullivan against the very skimpily clad woman named Godiva.
Name something you would be sure to order when buying a new car. Godiva.
Stereo.
Let me see. Stereo. It is number two. One answer, Kevin, gives you control. Something you would be sure to order when buying a new car.
Warranty.
Let me see. A warranty. Not there.
Wait a minute. For all the things about Kevin Sullivan in his life, you're going to bring up Chris Benoit, conspiracies, devil worship, all that sort of stuff? No, push that aside. He buys the warranty, like the extra warranty, when he goes to get a car? Otherwise, you know, why else would he say that? So Glow gets control of the board, and that means the video cuts to the WCW steal attempt. And what's amazing is the number one answer is still on the board.
The game, something you'd be sure to order when buying a new car, Kevin?
Air conditioning.
Air conditioning?
That's it.
Air conditioning?
Air conditioning.
Air conditioning.
You are still alive if we see air conditioning. You got that bank. It comes over here. Two answers would have won you the game, girls. You should order number three. Cruise control. Number four.
And six shifts, right? Yeah.
Four. Here we go.
They have to go to a sixth round here. Usually these don't go any more than four, but because the scores have been so low, so a hell of an editing job to get all of this in. Of course, who knows? Maybe this is compiled from two episodes, although I think Sullivan's wearing the same shirt the entire time. Of course, for all I know, he wore the same shirt the whole week. The only good thing about them going all the way around for a sixth round, we go back to Sid and Hollywood, is you get another Sid face-off out of this.
The top four answers are on the board. Name something that bees do. Hollywood.
They make honey.
Let me see honey. Number one, you think of a steal. Something bees do, Kevin.
Pollinate.
Quiet, get over there. They do what? Pollinate? Tony? Doesn't know. Steal? Doesn't know.
Swarm?
Quickly, Sid, one answer will win you this game. What is it? Now. Three seconds.
Swarm.
If Swarm is not there, the Glow Women are the champions. Show me Swarm.
The ironic thing is if Sid had listened to Kevin Nash on that one, they actually would have won, and it would have been a rare instance of Kevin Nash actually drawing money. But that being said, Sid is a consensus maker. That's why he's the leader of this group, and it's how he became the master and ruler of the world. So we go to the next video, which is much, much shorter. This is only 4 minutes from a different episode. And it's kind of the same intro. So as we go in, Hollywood is controlling. And what do you do when you wake up?
It's already been said. Ladies, settle down.
Well, he can't help it. His IQ isn't that high.
If you want to win, settle down. Quickly, an answer. Sit.
Cup of coffee.
Let me see. Drink coffee. There you go, ladies. They take the bank up, steal number one. Dirty, what do you say, Dutch?
All right, brush your hair.
Okay. Do you? Brush? Will you get back up here, Hollywood?
We have a meeting.
I'll have to start acting like you're Madonna, okay? You're just spanking. All right, let me see.
Ray Combs threatening to spank one of the Glow women in order to keep them in line. They were a little bit unruly on this show, and they had a chance to steal the $42 from WCW, but were unable to. Of course, that had nothing to do with Doug Dillinger. I mean, if he was guarding the $42, he probably wouldn't have been able to steal it anyway. Or at least is my understanding. So in the next face-off, of course, Dirty Dutch Mantel against Farmer's Daughter.
Tell me a noise that would make you call the police. Sally?
Shotgun.
Let me hear a shotgun. Gun. Number one.
Of course, Glow would not be able to finish off the board, so this allows WCW a steal attempt, and it made me think, what would these guys call the cops on? I mean, you know, they're on the road a lot. I mean, maybe if if McDonald's is closed or something. Who really knows?
It would make you call the police, Kevin?
Breaking of glass.
Tony, breaking glass.
Car crash.
Sid Vicious. With them or out on your own? I need an answer.
Breaking of glass.
They are unanimous that they're going to steal $67 with the breaking of glass. They did it. The money Welcome to the WCW.
Once again, another example of Sid Vicious drawing money for WCW. Oh, glass breaking immediately makes me think of Steve Austin and how WCW wouldn't really use him in that sort of role, and glass breaking would become his whole, the beginning of his theme song in the WWF as he sets the business on fire. So Master Blaster Steel against Jackie Stallone, which I'm telling you, out of all the face-off matchups, that's the one that makes me laugh the most for whatever reason.
Thank you, Sally. The top five answers are on the board. The question: name a game that kids have played for generations. Steel?
Hopscotch.
Let me see hopscotch. Number three, two answers give you control. A game that kids have played for generations.
House.
She said they played house. Not there. We know just what you meant. The men have control. You think of a Steve.
All right, I'm going to give Jackie Stallone a pass. She's a little bit older than everybody else on set and is probably thinking back to her own childhood, you know, playing with a dollhouse, something like that. But Tony Schiavone, when they go to the WCW side, his answer makes him seem way older than he really is, I think.
Tony, a game that kids have played four generations.
Marbles.
Let me see marbles.
Now, I might be wildly off base here, but I don't think kids were playing marbles after the 70s. I mean, I grew up in the late 80s, or I mean, I could remember to that point. I don't remember a single kid in school playing marbles. And the idea is they're playing it for generations, but I think it's implied still playing it today. Like, you'd have hopscotch and all that. Kevin Sullivan says, "Ring around the Rosie," which makes sense, par for the course, because it's a horror movie type thing with how, "Ring around the Rosie." That's the second strike, so it leaves it all up to Sid, the fearless leader and ruler of the world, who is really smart, even if I am only using half the brain you are.
Listen to me carefully. They're going to get a chance to steal, Mr. Vicious. The question is to name a game that kids have played for generations.
Hide and seek.
Yes!
Let me see.
Hide and seek.
Yes. Number one.
When I missed that booking on that independent show, I was actually playing hide and go seek. Sid actually does come off as remarkably normal on this show. Now, it helps putting him next to Dirty Dutch and Master Blaster Steel and, of course, Kevin Sullivan. And Mantel says tag, which is the number two answer. And they're on a good roll here, but, of course, Kevin Nash got to make it weird.
Steel, come on, Steel.
Doctor.
Doctor. A game that kids have played for generations. I know a few doctors who've played like they're a doctor. Let me see. Doctor. Three strikes.
I don't know what Kevin Nash's upbringing was like in Michigan or wherever the hell he's from, but yeah, me and the boys, we used to get out and play doctor down at Cobo. I don't do a very good Kevin Nash, so I'm just going to stop. So, Glow, you're going to be shocked to learn that they botched the steal attempt.
What are you saying?
After the show.
You love me still?
We'll talk about it later. Right now, I'm trying to be authoritative and find out a game that kids have played for years so you can steal
patty
their bank.
Cake.
You've got the bank. If we see patty cake. No! The WCW man.
While WCW is pitching the shutout, they have not wrapped things up yet. So we go to round four, the face-off, which is Tony Schiavone against Liberty. And we get a hilarious moment where the contestant, Liberty, mishears the question.
Name something that is toad. Liberty?
A frog.
Don't say anymore. Don't say another answer. Don't say another answer. Please. I am losing control of this show, and I will be authoritative as the Bob Barker were out here. I'm taking control right now. Liberty, don't say a word, Tony. The question was, name something that is toad. Liberty, you said a frog. All right, I'm sorry, sir, but what happened? Don't say a word.
I won't, but
don't.
I didn't know the question.
Liberty.
Okay. Can you repeat
that's
the question?
Not
Sally?
That's not fair.
That's too bad. That's too bad. Thank you. Now, Sally, this
you
Liberty.
Guys are all cheaters.
Sally, chill. Listen to me carefully. I asked you something that is toad. You said, sir, I'm sorry. We're going to have to tow your frog. Did not make our survey. Tony, something that is toad.
A car.
Let me see. A car. Number one.
can't help you when you get out there like that.
You see that a lot on Jeopardy, where somebody just barely misses a question on what might be like a technicality, and then the other person swoops in. Like, Tony basically gets a free throw on that one. So WCW gets control of the board. And Kevin Sullivan says, a boat, because you get your boat towed in Charlestown. You leave it on the Charles or the Mystic River. And that was on the board. Camper says, Sid Vicious. Figure that's appropriate for the area of the country that he's from, which would be from anywhere he damn well pleases. That's the number three answer. So that leaves the number four answer on the board. Can Dirty Dutch Mantel get it? As there almost feels like there's a riot breaking out on set as the Glow Girls are turning it into like the Bad News Bears at the Astrodome.
Dirty Dutch, something that is towed.
House trailer.
Let me see, for the game. Same thing. Trailer, same thing. Think of a steal. You can take the lead. What do you say, Dutch?
Oh, you're not accepting that one. Obviously. Well, obviously you're not.
No, Dirty Dutch. Bad.
Ladies, can we just live in peace for just a moment? Dutch, give me another answer.
A barge.
No. What?
A barge.
A barge.
A barge. On a river.
All right. Excuse me. Will you go up there and milk some cows, farmer? Get over there. You're causing so much trouble. Here we go. Settle down. Thank you. Okay, here we go. You've won the game, if we see.
The board.
Oh, excuse me. Sally, will you please? All right. You've won the game, if we see. A barge.
And now it's all up to Kevin Nash, a Master Blaster Steel, the future Odds, the future Vincent Vontavious Vegas III. I mean, can he come up with the answer to win the game for WCW and send them to Fast Money? To can Kevin Nash draw money is what I am saying.
Think of the steel. What do you say, steel?
Skiers.
What's that?
Toe skiers.
You yeah, toe yeah. Skiers.
Oh,
you've won the game. If we see skiing.
Again, you can't say that Master Blaster Steel didn't do anything in WCW when he won the game for their side when they were on Family Feud this one time, sending them to Fast Money. You have to wonder, who's the two that they're going to choose? Tony Schiavone's an obvious choice, and a good choice to go second, because a WCW broadcaster has always got to be quick, always got to be on their toes, especially when they're not given the storylines in advance. And I know that that's later on, but by nature, a broadcaster has to be able to adapt and adjust and be smart about things. And Kevin Sullivan is going to go first, although I have to wonder if they're going to understand a word that he's saying.
We ask 100 people, name something to eliminate from our everyday diets to be healthier.
Fat.
Something that you're fed up with.
Wife.
Something that melts.
Ice cream.
How many sleepless nights you have per month?
Two.
A kind of beverage you drink most.
Soda.
Turn around here.
He didn't do bad towards the goal of getting 115 to 125 points. That wife thing is a little weird, you know, considering what ended up happening to Nancy Sullivan later on. So let's see how he did.
Something to eliminate from our everyday diets to be healthier, you said? Fat, survey said. 26. Something that you're fed up with, you said? Your wife, I hope you can wrestle. What did the survey say? Two. Something that melts, you said.
Ice cream.
Ice cream. Now, let me just ask before I just check this. You really love your wife.
Yeah.
She doesn't eat too much ice cream.
She's less into ice cream and more into Fallen Angel food cake.
No.
Okay. All right. He's crossing his fingers. What did our survey say? 28. How many sleepless nights you have per month? You said? Two nights. You're not worrying about your wife or anything. Okay. What did the survey say? 20. Good job. You know, if you'd unfold your arms, I'd feel more comfortable, Kevin. Kind of beverage you drink most, you select. Soda. What did our survey say? 40. Right back there with your teammates.
The wife answer getting two is kind of funny to me. I always like the ones that got exactly two. They would never have one on the board, despite the Family Guy gag that they did that one time where Peter managed to say the one, and he said, oh, I was the person in the survey. Two is the minimum that I've ever seen on Family Feud, and I love when anybody ever gets one of them. So 116 points for Kevin Sullivan. Not bad. I mean, they're right on track. And Tony Schiavone comes out for round two. He can't quite find his mark on the floor as Ray Combs has to direct him a little bit. And his first answer is sugar to eliminate from diets. And then, unfortunately, the video cuts off. But I can assure you that this is the greatest fast money in the history of our sport. And I am not just joking around, because I very much enjoyed doing this Family Feud episode. Oh my God, it was hell though putting together all the sound clips, because I marked the time cues for when everything, for when I pull everything, and holy crap, I mean, for a show like this, I have to pull a ton of them. But that's a wrap for WCW and WWF on Family Feud. No YouTube comment theater this week. There's too many videos to go between. And besides, as I just mentioned, I'm freaking exhausted from pulling all of those clips. This is a fun show to do, but it was extremely draining. Now, another podcast on the Sportscasters, my good pal Steve Bennett, the last episode out as I speak. He's got the baseball writer Keith Law on his latest episode. I guess I don't have a monopoly on having Keithies on my various podcasts. But he wrote a book called The Inside Game, and they talk on the show about Pedro Martinez being left in Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS, which I think I've said on the podcast before. I was in favor of Grady leaving Pedro in the game. That is what I said to my friend Merrill on the phone at the time. However, my blood alcohol level was approximately 0.27 at the time, so I should not be held accountable for anything like that. And on the Our Vantage Point podcast, Joe Morata and Michael Quinn, they are paying homage to one of my favorite things, which is the old televised house shows of the World Wrestling Federation, the Boston Garden, the Philadelphia Spectrum, all that good stuff. I've noticed that Mystery Titans Theater has been brought back in a somewhat modified form where they're looking at old Boston Garden house shows. I'm glad to see that's on there. Again, my leaving the Pro Wrestling Only feed has nothing to do. I don't have any heat with the boys or anything like that. It's just me going off. You know, I'm going to do my own thing. And this opens up a spot for somebody else, because all I am is a person who started doing this podcast in February of 2017, and somebody, in this case, Kelly Nelson of the WorldCast podcast and one of the Titans of Wrestling, enjoyed this show and reached out to me. So it's time to make room for somebody else to get the promotion that comes with being part of a network. But I do plan to be on here through episode 170, which should be in 2 weeks, I would imagine. I mean, I'm sure if they'll have me on the feed until then, I'm sure it's not going to be too much of a problem. As for next week's show, I have no freaking idea, because I'm not even watching wrestling at this point. It quite frankly kind of makes me sick. So maybe I'll just do another game show. Was like ECW ever on The Price is Right? I mean, that would be pretty freaking awesome. The Sandman drinking a beer in front of Bob Barker. That'd be pretty cool. How about, was Mid-South Wrestling ever on The Match Game? Oh, wait, no, they couldn't have had both faces and heels on there, because Watts doesn't like them in the same place at the same time. How about Southeastern Championship Wrestling on, I don't know. I mean, yeah, wrestlers on game shows is something that's always going to be fun to me. But if you enjoyed this show very much, do me a solid. And it'll definitely revive my energy levels after pulling all those clips for this show. Leave a review on iTunes/Apple Music so that I can look at it later with my brand new laptop that's going to be a pain in the ass to get everything set up the way that I like it, especially moving over everything from iTunes. I already downloaded Audacity, and I know that doing the podcast on that is going to go a hell of a lot better than it has on this computer. Where, well, as I'm recording it right now, the little thing in Audacity, which is definitely an older version, says disk space remains for recording 62 hours and 6 minutes. I am not going to stick around for that long. As I said 4 times already, I'm too freaking exhausted. So I will part for this week. And I thank you so much again for listening. And do tune in next time for another exciting episode of Greetings from Allentown. We'll be right back.
about coffee.